Okay, so I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Riskin, but I guess I was like bothered because I didn't think it was enough of a chabura, but I also felt like there was more to it than just that. So in the process, got to read an interesting idea this morning by Nechama Leibowitz also. And then always as Naim Torah has something good to say about it. And it's just interesting to see what the Medrash's take on this whole story is as well. Okay, so dreams. Anybody that's learned Gemara Brachos knows that the ninth parak of Brachos is almost exclusively dedicated towards dreams. I actually wanted to go through it and find this morning and find what the craziest like dreams that the Gemara talks about. But didn't have time. But the Gemara talks that if a person has a dream about an elephant, if a person dreams about Rachav, if all these things. So there's a lot of symbolism to dreams. The thing is that when we think about dreams, for the most part, how do dreams really work? These are the ideas that we're preoccupied with in life. And then, I don't know, you know, we go to sleep and we think about it, right? Like, you're about to make a simcha, you have nightmares that the simcha starts and, I don't know, nobody bought clothing, or you forgot to tell everyone, or there's no caterer. You're doing a big event with work, like you have dreams about, oh my gosh, like we're not prepared for it. So those are realities, but like there's no deep symbolism to them. Those are the ideas that occupy our minds. So obviously that's what we think about. Okay, so psychologists, among them Freud, you know, also spent a lot of time studying dreams. And we study dreams also here at the Chabura. I don't know if anybody remembers, but a lot of years ago, we did a great one on probably Parshas Vayetze, but the idea of double dreams, that when you have one dream, it doesn't mean anything. It's just like, you know, stamp. But if you have two dreams, so Rabbi Shalom says biblically, that means like that it's going to really happen. It's nevuah, not just, you know, thoughts. And so there obviously are some pretty famous dreams. So today we're going to take a look at one of those dreams. And here we go. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava vayelech Haran. Now Yaakov leaves Be'er Shava and he goes to Haran. So famous Rashi has nothing to do with the Chabura, but I think it's an important one, is that why do we need to say that he left Be'er Shava? Who cares? We just need to know that he gets to Haran, right? The destination is all that matters. And Rashi says that when a tzaddik leaves a city, he leaves a roshem. He makes a mark on this city. And I think that that's like an important thing because so many people spend their lives hoping that they make a difference and that the world is a better, different place because they were there. And that's essentially what Yaakov is told. He leaves Be'er Shava and he actually makes a difference, right? Like there is a tangible difference between when he was there versus when he wasn't there. And he comes to that place and he sleeps there because the sun is set. And so he puts his head down and he sleeps there. So he takes stones and puts them around him. Of course, the famous Medrash that the stones fight about, you know, who's going to be around him. I don't know, maybe one day. I don't think we've ever done that that Medrash as a Chabura, but maybe one day. And he sleeps in that place. Interestingly, the Gemara says that if Gaba Makom is Ein Pegia Ela Tfila, that Pegia is Tfila. If you look at the very last source all the way on the bottom, take a look at the first pasuk there. V'Yaakov Alach LeDarko V'Yifkeu Bo Malachei Elokim, that the angels pagabo, they also pagabo. There's a cool medrash that I saw that I don't remember where exactly, but that connects the two. There's tefillah at the beginning and there's tefillah at the end. So vayetze is tefillah at the beginning and tefillah at the end. It's a big sandwich that way. Okay.
Where else have we seen pagia? Or I guess altogether, certainly in the context of
the tefillah. So the Gemara quotes, it's the Gemara in Brachos. I only know what daf it is because that's like the first daf of Gemara that you learn in like at least the many of the day schools. It's the fourth parak of Brachos and Chavav. So it talks about what tefillah is. So Avram, it's Vayashkem Avram Baboker. So it says that that's it. But here, the Gemara there quotes a pasuk not from, I don't think it's a pasuk from Chumash. I think it's a pasuk from Nach.
Okay.
I don't know. That's how that
term in general altogether in any context.
But. Yeah, I mean the more literal translation is he happens on the place, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is like that's like the very definition of Maariv. Maariv just happens. You know what I'm saying? Like Shacharis is. I feel like Shacharis. David's like maybe made a look. No, not sure.
No. I have a question, but you're good.
Yeah, I feel like Shacharis is like Shacharis is planned. Right, we got that. Mincha, you have to plan or it doesn't happen, especially like this time of year, depending on where you work, if you don't work in a place that has a kavua minyan. But Maariv, it's like, I don't know, you get home early, you daven's man. Yeah, you get home late, you daven at the earlier of the late minyanim. You get home really late, you daven at 9:45, 10 o'clock, whatever the latest Maariv is. If you feel really frum and you get home really late, you drive to Woodmere. I don't know, it's like, that's what I feel like. I don't know, it's the same thing here in Beit Shemesh, you know, you stay here, you go up the hill, whatever. Anyhow, yeah, okay. David, you have a question that's probably more important than that.
It's a tiny question. Why does the pasuk tell us ki vahashemesh?
Oh, so I think that's like he has to go to sleep because the sun has set. Meaning Rashi says that he didn't real. I mean, Rashi says he got all the way to Charan and says, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I passed the place that my grandfather, you know, went to. Okay, this Yitzhak, Har HaMoriah, and I didn't daven there. So he goes back. And then there's Kvitzas HaDerech. Actually, it's not Kvitzas HaDerech, it's Kvitzas HaAretz. The land moves, not his feet. So instead of being like the world's fastest runner, there's like a super conveyor belt gets him back in a moment. But I think that the simpler answer is he's traveling from Be'er Sheva, he's going to Charan. Probably he's taking the biblical highway. So he is on Derech HaVot. He's going to go through Yerushalayim. After Yerushalayim, he's going to go wind around Shechem. And eventually he'll go like north of the Kinneret and make his way to Charan. So why does he stop there? Kiva Hashemesh. He didn't have to stop in Yerushalayim, but he stops there because the sun set. If the sun hadn't set, he would have gone further. It's like Pilagish Begiva. Why do they stop where they stop? Because the sun set. If they had a couple more hours of daylight, they would have gone back to Har Ephraim. There'd be a lot more people from Binyamin.
Wasn't Yeshiva Shem Be'ever in Yerushalayim?
I'm not sure. It's a good question. They're actually, I don't know if this is true or not. So, like, just take it for what it's for what it's worth. But last year we spent Chanukah in Tveria. So I don't know. My kids have never been to Tzfat, so we went to Tzfat. If you're gonna go to Tzfat with kids, you have to hire a tour guide. There's a lot of places that you could like pretend that you could do it on your own. Which is what I do with most of my life. I'm like, well, yeah, we don't need anybody. We could do this on our own. But you can't really, like, you either know Tzfat or you don't know Tzfat. But we had this brilliant idea. There is a, like, one of these scavenger hunts on your phone that you could buy for 150 shekel. And we were two families. We're like, this is like a metzia, right? Like, you divide it by 12 people. It's like almost nothing. Okay, so it didn't work. We couldn't figure anything out. We stopped after about 20 minutes and then got pizza. But there is a place in Tzfat on the top of, it's, I don't know, it's like before you get to like old Tzfat, like with all the like Kabbalistic stuff and all the shuls and whatever, like there's this like little park up there. And there's a shul up there that has a spot called Yeshiva Chaim Ve'ever. And they claim that's the place, the cave. It's a cave, I don't know. David, it's like Eliyahu Navi's cave in Haifa, right? So, I don't know. It's like a little tiny cave. They have like Tehillim there on Shabbos afternoon for like the kids. So like, I don't know. The youth department of Tzfat hangs out in Yeshiva Chaim Ve'ever. They claim it's there. So I don't know. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I'm not sure where Yeshiva Chaim Ve'ever is. But that's a very long answer to your question. I'm not sure. Okay. Pasuk Yud Bet. So what happens? He has a dream, and there's a ladder. The ladder is on the ground, and Rosho Magia Shamaima, its head goes all the way up to the heavens, and the angels are going up and going down. Okay, so what exactly does this mean? This dream could mean just about anything. It seems to be pretty like, you know, on the one hand, it could just be that Yaakov is like picturing these angels, whatever they are. It's like simple angels that are going up and down, or it can mean so much more than that. So Rashi says, which I think is a pretty simple, not simplistic, but it's a pretty straight answer to it. It says, Olim t'chila v'achar kach yordim. First they went up, and then they went down. Some of the Mefarshim struggle. If the angels go up first, That means there's no angels watching him downstairs for a moment. Then they say it's not a big deal because look at the next pasuk. If God is watching over you, you're fine. So what happens? Malachim shalivu ba'aretz ein yotzen chutz la'aretz. Ba'al rakia, the ones that are the angels that accompany him in the land of Israel, don't go to chutz la'aretz. And they went up to the heavens. And then the ones from chutz la'aretz, those angels came out to accompany him. It's a great question on this Rashi, by the way, that I'm like ashamed I never thought of. Where is he having this dream?
He's still in...
Right,
yeah, he's in Yerushalayim. It's not like he's on the border. If you tell me that he has his dream all the way up by Tzvat, okay, fine. He's practically like out of Israel. But you're talking about having the dream in Yerushalayim. Like, he's still got a decent amount of time to get out of Israel. So how do you deal with that? So what? I don't know if this is...
Not with the Pritas Aretz concept.
Oh, right. Okay, so they actually... I have no idea where I saw this, but someone says that the land actually folded itself up. It's not Kvitzas Ha'aretz, it's like Kipul Ha'aretz. So like, imagine if you took all of Israel and you folded it up, it's like the size of, size of like your backyard, right? So if that's the case, then he really is on the border, because everything is a border. He'll be able to get out of there in no time. But anyway, Rashi takes a very simple approach in the sense that these angels... are really, it's dealing, Yaakov's fear is he's leaving Chutzlah, he's leaving Eretz Yisrael, the place that is considered safe for him, and what does he have? He has these new angels that are taking care of him. It's local, right? The angels are local to our story. That is what Rashi says. Take a look at the Baal HaTurim. So the Baal HaTurim says, Sulam Begematria Sinai. Shereu Mamad Har Sinai. This story... the connection of the heavens and the earth, Sulam, is Sinai. Now, the Baal HaTurim has so many gematrias on this pasuk, he can tie it into just about anything. But I did like the idea that somehow this is connected to Sinai. So what exactly does that mean? I hope that we could explore that a little bit more together. Okay, but this is definitely more than Rashi is local. The Baal HaTurim is a little bit loftier. He's dealing with the broad strokes of history. Who are these angels? Who are the angels that are going up? So Rashi says it's the angels of Chutzla, or of Eretz Yisrael, that protected him. So I want to share with you the Oznaim LaTorah. That's on the right side. This is like amazing. The Oznaim LaTorah says that where was the last time, I don't know if he doesn't say this, but I think that this is true. Where is the last time we had angels? We're in Parshas Vayetze. Last time we had angels.
Avram,
good. Where? Close. So Greg, you're like 90% there. It's the same angels.
Akedah.
Stone.
Right? What do we have? Actually, it's no. Hold on. No, it's not true.
Well,
the Akedah. Who said Akedah? Steve, that was you? Oh, David. David's right. Akedah was later, right? There ain't... What?
Steve said.
Okay, fine.
You can't see him, but he's
there. All right, Steve got it right.
That's where we're moving.
The Akedah really was the last time we had angels. But that angel, the angel there, did his mission and went back up. The problem is, says the Oznaim LaTorah, is that we have these angels by Sdom v'Amorah, which are also the ones of Avraham, and they go on a mission. And what is their mission? Their mission is to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And they do. They destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. The problem is that they don't do their mission exactly correctly. Because the way they're supposed to do their mission is they're supposed to go to Lot and say, listen, God is destroying the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. But what do they say? They say, no, it's not God. Ki mashchitim anachnu. We're the ones that are destroying it. So Rashi says that their punishment is that when they're ready to destroy it, what do they have to say? They have to say, listen, it's not, we can't do this. We have to wait for God. The Oznaim LaTorah takes it one step further and says that they actually, they're punished for what they did. So let's take a look from the second line. Oh, so these angels, great. these angels that took credit for destroying Sodom and Gomorrah, they have a theological problem. Even the angels struggle sometimes theologically. And what is their theological dilemma? They say, I don't understand. Yitzhak has two sons. He has Yaakov and he has Esav. So if you ask them, Tzadik Tamim Yosheva Oli Mitzad Echad V'Kofri Karu Tzeach V'Noif Mitzad Sheini. On the one hand, what do you have? You have a tzaddik. He's a tamim guy. He stays in the tents and learns Torah. And on the other side, what do you have? He's a kofar bikar. He doesn't believe in God. He's a rotzeach and a noif, right? So he's a murderer and a adulterer. Basically, he does the cardinal three. So, she'al echame yamatzei begalu, while shading the sherev menucha beveit aviv. One of them is supposed to stay. One of them is supposed to go into exile, and the other one is supposed to stay b'menucha beveit aviv. Yaakov Esav, mi meham yanuach umi yanuach. Who should have peace and who should not? Hallo akol utocham gam malachim shavchu etzdom ayomrim al Esav ki mashchitim anachto tovil tiotur lo sarid palit. He's the one that should go out. Yaakov yoshe boletor kasher yeshav ad heina, and Yaakov should stay where he was. So he says these angels. I actually went backwards. Right? The question comes first, the theological dilemma. Then he says, who are these angels? It's the angels of Sodom. These angels had to learn and understand how God ran the world. How do they do that? They have to see that that God, there's a bigger picture. And those are, once they finally understand that, once God explains to them how it works, that good and bad is not so simple. So what happens at that point in time? Then they're allowed to go back up. They're the angels that go back up. Oh, it's an interesting take. Okay, let's skip to the other side. Olim v'Yordimbo, that's the Bereshis Rabba. So he says, Kol mishu malachim omer zchuto al Yisrael ole legedula, umishel malamid alem chovato yored megedulato. What does it mean that the angels are going up and down? So the angels that are the ones that say good things about the Jewish people, those are the ones that are going to go up. And the angels that say bad things about the Jewish people, they're the ones that are going to go down. And that's what's going on in these stories. So the Medrash, it's interesting because the simple understanding of Rashi is really just a much more basic thing. Like Yaakov has to deal with his life. But the Medrash is talking about much loftier things, whether it's theological dilemmas and how to understand and how to manage them, or just the idea that like Hashem takes care of Klal Yisrael, like that's a big deal. Let's take a look at the Sfarno. That's the underneath the next set of psukim. The Sfarno says, "Hinei malach Elokim olim v'yordim, b'hinei Hashem nitzal alav. Ki amnam kein yelo besof shesarei umot achar alitam yardu, v'kel yitbarach nitzav la'ad lo yitosh atamo, kamru ki yaseh kala k'chol agoyim, v'otcha lo yaseh kala." So what the Sfarno says is that the angels that we're talking about, this is referring to the various galuyot, the various exiles that the Jewish people will have. There actually isn't even an opinion that says that the ladder has four rungs, one for each one of the different exiles. And to say that God is standing on the top of them. Yaakov, you're going into the first exile, which will be mirrored by the exile of Babel, and then Persia, and then, it's got another one in there, Babel, Persia, Daniel has that, maybe Paras and Madai, Yavan is number three, and number four is Edom. So what happens? Yaakov Avinu is comforted by the fact that God is standing on the top of them. Again, for Yaakov to be going into Galus and to see this, you know, is comforting. Now, what really is the correct answer? What is the pshat? I don't know, probably Rashi's answer. It's the simple angels that were accompanying him versus ones that left him. Why do we have more of this? So I think that this speaks to like a broader question, and that's what is Medrash trying to do? So where did these Midrashim come from? These Midrashim were Nechama Leibowitz points out, when were these Midrashim discussed? They were discussed at the time of Churban Bayit Sheni, either right before or right after. So for the people there, they needed the rabbi to come up and give a drasha. that was powerful, that was going to give them the spiritual sustenance to get through a very, very challenging time. And I think we all know that. You know, there are times where we need something, whether it's the rabbi's speech or some drasha or some learning to sustain us when things are very, 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 you know, difficult. We actually this week, sadly, on Motzei Shabbos, like it was maybe 11 o'clock at night, ready to go to bed, and you know, like you're looking at your phone the last time before like the night ends, and there was a message from our shul saying that one of the chayalim from our community was killed in Gaza over Shabbos. So that's like hard, because I'm not sure if Ramat Beit Shemesh ever had a chayal that fell in battle, but certainly our community has never had that, like the four blocks that we live in. And so for us, like for my kids, it was like even harder, because we know the chayal. He's a neighbor of ours, and the funeral was like really, really, like really rough and really hard. You know, obviously for the Avelim more so than anybody else, but just for the community was really like shaken by this. So the next night, the rabbi, which I don't know why, it's like a little bit of a taina I have on like how these things work out. Not on this rabbi, but in general. They had to have chizuk, but the chizuk was only for the women. It's like the men don't need chizuk. I don't know. But okay, so there was chizuk for the women. The rabbi did like 2 hours of like questions and answers in emuna and bitachon. And Malki said it was like very powerful and very comforting. But sometimes you need, you know, a drasha that fits. And certain psukim fit better in some places and sometimes than they would at others. So especially in a situation like this, Yaakov Avinu is about to go into exile. He needs like a little bit of comfort. So God's comfort is, I'm getting you a new team, fresh angels. These are the angels of Chutz Laretz. They've got kohos to deal with Chutz Laretz, not Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So now fast forward 1500 years or whatever it is to the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. You have a group of people. There's no Nevuah. There's no Nevuah telling them they're coming back in 70 years. They have no idea. Are they coming back in 100 years? In 1,000 years? Never? They have no idea. Okay, they have to believe that they're coming back, because that's one of the principles of our faith. But that's really like, it's a really hard thing. They're suffering from a crisis of faith. In that crisis of faith comes along the Medrash and says, okay, here you go. The drasha is that Yaakov Avinu, it's the fourth rung on the ladder. There is nothing left. Interestingly, there are midrashim later on, and I don't know when those midrashim come about, but there is they add a fifth one in. There's a fifth exile, and that is Galus Yishmael. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, in each generation, we need to hear it. It could be that that became more popular when Islam was growing as a world power 1,000 years ago or more than that, and wreaking havoc on the Jews. All possibilities. Okay, fine. So that is really not what I wanted to do, but that kind of explains the dream a little bit. But this is Rabbi Riskin's thought. Rabbi Riskin says, isn't this an amazing dream? You have a guy who's running for his life, and what happens? He has this dream about the connection between heaven, connecting earth to the heaven. You would think that what would his dream be? Survival, right? How am I going to make it? But no, his dream is something about, oh my goodness, how amazing is it that there is this ability to connect the heavens and the earth? Now let's take a look right after the Sfarim. What?
Because we're slightly cynical about it, like, that's how he's going to survive, is by connecting the heaven.
I'm not sure if I don't even know if that has to be cynical.
No, I guess, but I don't know if self-serving, but no, but I'm saying in terms of like, if he's going to be dreaming about survival, all right, this is how he dreams of survival.
One of my favorite books is The Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. Anybody ever read that by Yaffa Eliach? Yeah, it's great. If you've never read it, it's worth it. It's like, I don't know, you could probably knock it off in like in a couple nights. It's a weekend book or whatever. And I'm sure that the West Hempstead Library has it, because it's like one of the most, it's a pretty famous Holocaust book. But like half the stories there are that. You have people that are suffering the tragedy of the Holocaust, and how do they get faith? Somehow, they're able to connect heaven and earth. Right now, the earth is a terrible place to be in. So what do? they move themselves up to like the heavenly spheres. I think that that's definitely, you know, a possible way of looking at it. But the key piece, says Rabbi Riskin, is Yaakov is having lofty dreams. Now take a look at the second set of psukim, Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Dalet. This is after Yaakov has made the deal of the sheep. That's another one. We've never done a chabura on the different, the speckled and the brown and the different types of sheep. I don't know. Every year I'm like, we should probably explore it. And then I'm like, no, there's no way we're going to do that. But okay. So what happens right after that? So it's not part of this year. Vayishlach Yaakov v'yikra l'Rachel l'yasa del tzonok. Yaakov calls to Rachel and Leah to the field. Now, the pasuk right before is God tells him to go home. Vayomer lehen ro'en ochi p'nei avichen k'inenu kitmo shel shom. V'elohei avi hayayimadi. He says, listen, I recognize that your father, his face to me is not the way it was yesterday. But any of that to end the day before. Meaning, like, I've been here for 20 years, at least, according to Rabbi Shalom, many more, much more than 20 years, maybe 60-something years. But he said, I've been here for a long time, and your father's, you know, whole interaction with me is just not what it was in the past. But any of that, and you know I worked really hard. Yaakov gives this speech twice. First, he has to give this speech to his wives, and later on in the parasha at the end, he's going to give this speech to his father-in-law. You know, I did everything. And your father, he tricked me and he flipped my wages tens of times. But God did not allow me messed over. God, he doesn't do evil to me. Whatever the deal was, spotted, speckled, colored, not colored, that's what happened. And he saved plundered from your father's sheep and gave it to me. I don't think that Lavan lost that much, meaning he still has plenty. But he sees that Yaakov is growing and saying, whoa, that should also be mine. And now he says this weird thing. He says when the sheep are in the heat, meaning they're ready to procreate, I lift my eyes and I see in a dream. And what happens? The atudim, whatever it is, they come. Meaning God brings the sheep that are supposed to be the correct color. So let's say we need spotted sheep. The spotted sheep are removed from the flock. God brings those spotted sheep. They procreate, and God then brings them back. He says, I see this in a dream. And this angel comes to me in my dream, and he calls me. And I say, Hineni. Now, Hineni is generally what we consider that to be like lofty. Akedas Yitzchak. Mechiras Yosef. He's saying Hineni by like the angel calling him and say, listen, you got to look at this. This is what's going on with the sheep. I see that Lavan is messing you up. I'm taking care of you. And you need to go home. This is his dream. Rabbi Riskin says, could you imagine? Look how his dreams have changed. His dreams have changed to the protection of God, Malachei Elokim, the connection of the heavens and earth, to dreams about financial success. He says, Rabbi Riskin points out, what a contrast in dreams. And so he says that to survive in exile, a person needs to act differently. And so what happens? Yaakov Avinu has to be a survivor, a hustler. That's the only way he's going to make it, or he's going to fall apart. But Hashem says, listen, you got to go home. You got to go back. Go back to the land of Israel where your dreams are loftier, more spiritual. And then it's interesting because we always we know the Rashi from next week's Parsha, Im Lavangarti, Vatariag Mitzah Shamarti. Rabbi Riskin says it's true that he might in action There was no impact. His time by Lavan, there's no impact. He kept all the mitzvahs the entire time. But he said Lavan has seeped into his dreams. The materialism of Lavan has seeped into his dreams. And so God says you need to move back so that you can go back to your previous level. Rabbi Riskin says that that's like a fascinating take on how dreams go. The dreams at the beginning, the dreams at the end. But he then ends off, Rabbi Riskin, by saying that if you look at the very end of the parasha, what happens? Yaakov alach l'darko, v'yifku bo malachei Elokim. Yaakov goes l'darko. And he bumps into more angels. So we had angels at the beginning. They're going up and down the ladder. We had angels in the dream. And he wants to suggest that this is actually a third dream. He bumps into angels again. So he says, it's the encampment of God. And he says, he calls the place Machanayim, two camps. Now, many Mefarshim say, what are the two camps? It's the angels of Eretz Yisrael and the angels of Chutz La'aretz. As they're meeting up, one camp going one way and one going the other way. But perhaps you can say, actually, Rabbi Riskin suggests, that the Machanayim, the two camps are the camp of Yaakov Avinu and his family and the angels of God. There is a fusion almost of the two of them. What's happening is his family is dedicated to a way of Torah lifestyle. And in that sense, they're together. He even goes so far as to say that if you have a family that's dedicated to Torah and family values, they in essence, they become angels. It's almost like he wants to suggest that maybe these angels are referring to his family. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's what he meant. I'm not sure if that's how I see it either. But he does point out that there is one difference in this story, and that is that the angels aren't going up and down now, but they're going sideways. Instead of connecting the heavens and the earth that way, which is so lofty, somehow he's brought spirituality down to this world. And in that sense, he's done a pretty good job. But Rabbi Riskin just ends off by saying that Yaakov halach l'darko. What does Yaakov do? He's back on track. That's how you could read Yaakov halach l'darko. He's back on track with heavenly aspirations. He kind of took a pause along the way where he lost his compass, a spiritual compass. But Yaakov Avinu, when he arrives back in Eretz Yisrael, he gets a Machanayim. He now has been shifted in his thinking once again, and he's back on track. And that is the journey of Yaakov Avinu. It's amazing that Yaakov Avinu, so much happens in this one parsha. He leaves, spends 20 years in exile, and he comes back. So next week we'll pick up with Vayishlach, which is not really it happening in Chutz La'aretz, but it's like at the, in between. He's almost in Israel, not in Israel, but he is more or less back within the boundaries of Israel. All right, have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone.